it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. Trout do 80% of their feeding underwater. I wonder how many times I've repeated that platitude over the years. Well, in the most recent issue of Trout Magazine, a publication of Trout Unlimited, of which I'm a member, and you are as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tom Rosenbauer has an article titled, Trout Do 80% of Their Feeding Underwater, but the heading above it is Trout Myths. Yes, Rosenbauer calls this a myth and says it's risky.
So what is a myth? Yeah, what's a myth?
Well, I think it's, the technical literary term.
No, don't give me the technical literary term.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to give that to you because it doesn't apply in this case. In this case, the myth would be, okay, this is something that really isn't true, or it's partly true. True some of the time, but not... it's not as rock solid as we think it is.
So the reason Steve had to stop at the technical definition is because Steve has a PhD in linguistics. So he lords that over me every time he can.
Yeah, well, it'd be about the only thing I could lord over you, Dave. Oh, man.
Just kidding. That's the last. Steve is not that way at all.
You're just messing with me. I tell you what.
I'm just messing with you.
Yes, you myth.
You myth you.
Oh, man. No, what you really want to know is where the myth originated,
right?
All right,
here we go.
Yeah,
so where did the myth originate? I know you've repeated it. Repeated it. And I learned it from you.
Yeah, and I learned it from a respected mentor.
Yeah, and you learned from a respected mentor.
I bet it's in that bestseller book we wrote, too.
Oh, Lord. There might be a lot of those myths inside that best-selling book.
That's right. We're going to retitle our book. Yeah, The Fly Fisher's Book of Myths.
Oh, man. Oh, goodness.
Oh, boy. This is going downhill in a hurry, isn't it? Well, Rosenbauer said that Orvis is to blame. I guess they had an insert card in some of the major outdoor magazines back in the day, like in the 70s. I don't know if that was like Outdoor Life, Field and Stream. And this insert card had an ad for 8 weighted nymphs and a fleece pouch for $9.95. And in the copy explaining why the nymphs were so deadly, it included that line about trout doing 80% of their feeding underwater.
Huh. Yeah, that sounds, that's it. I've heard that, well, from you.
Yeah, and, the thing is, at some level, it's been helpful. I think even if it's a myth, it probably forced guys like me who, fished early on. I fished as though trout did 100% of their feeding on the surface. I mean, when I learned to fish, it was back in the day of the Royal Coachman I think I had, what's that pattern that was popular in Colorado that you can fish wet or dry? Oh, a Renegade. You remember that?
Yeah, the Renegade.
So that and then a Parachute Adams. No, I'm sorry. Just an Adams. There were no parachutes to it, so just an Adams. Those are the dry flies. That's what I did all my fishing with. So,
well, just to refresh our history, my history and your history, I learned to fly fish because you fly fished, and so I purchased a rod back in the day, and you and I fished together, so everything you did. I simply had no knowledge of it.
That's why you're such a bad fly fisher,
exactly.
Dave.
That I've grown a little bit since then.
Yes, you have.
But honestly, I pretty much dry fly fished really during, almost until we moved to Chicago. And and it's I really didn't learn how to nymph fish and really use streamers, deep into my 30s, right? So so this idea of I really did fish as if 100% of the time they're feeding off the surface. So what you said is actually really true.
Yeah. So even though it was a myth, for me it was a corrective, and I needed to hear that. So, you know, I mean, Rosenbauer, as he talks about this, says that, yeah, it's true. Most of the time these fish, they should feed under the surface. That's where they live, and they live closer to the bottom where the water velocity is slower, so they don't have to fight the current. And, you know, you think about that. We've caught a lot of fish off the bottom, haven't we?
So is the bottom, so we always talk about when you're fishing your nymph indicator, is the bottom faster or slower than
bottom
the top?
Bottom is slower.
The bottom is slower.
The
current
is slower. You acted like you were asking me, like you knew it, but you didn't think I did, Dave.
I was just testing you.
You're really messing with me on this. Yeah, did you want to know if that's a myth, if the water is slower at the bottom?
Well, I can't lord linguistics over you, so I got to lord something over you.
Oh, man. Well, anyway, with all of that, having said all of that, Rosenbauer still believes it's a myth to say that trout do 80% of their feeding underwater. And we're going to talk about seven of his reasons why. There's probably a few more. He didn't number them in the article, but as I kind of read through it, these are the ones that stuck out to me. So we'll just go through these and talk about them and see if we think these are mythical or not.
Yeah. So the first one is that the reason that trout don't do all of that 80% underneath the water is that the water at the bottom is full of sticks, stones, and algae, basically sludge.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like they're nosing through everything to select the nymphs that are just right, you know, that are underneath all that. So I think that's a great point. So the water at the bottom of the stream or the river is full of sticks, stones, and algae. So obviously they're not feeding in that, or if they are, it's something that is easily spotted, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's one of those things when you hear it, you say, oh, that makes total sense. I should have thought of that, but yeah, it's not just a rich insect soup. It's got all kinds of stuff that gets stirred up. So that makes sense. Second thing that he says is that aquatic insects spend most of their time glued to the bottom in caddis cases or hiding on the undersides of stones or buried in silt. Again, it's like, yeah, that I knew that, and I just hadn't maybe factored that in. It's only when they get dislodged or when they emerge as adults, what we call an insect hatch, that they drift to the surface. So it's not like the trout are sitting there and you've got this steady stream of insects, you know, popping to the surface. That just happens at select times.
That's really good. That's a really great point. I wouldn't have really thought about it like that. And Rosenbauer does say, you know, once the hatch begins, they do rush to the surface quickly, right? They move up the water column, and he says they aren't loitering in the current for hours. It's not like there's a 3-hour trickle to the surface beforehand. So, I mean, you've done that. You've fished the Mother's Day caddis hatch, right?
Right.
So you've seen this in real time. I've never hit the Mother's Day caddis hatch out in Montana.
Yeah, it really is fascinating because sometimes you can do really well during the hatch, and other times it can be a bit frustrating. But I think the thing that stands out to me is maybe that idea that you can, if the hatch is coming, start fishing, because, you know, it's almost like there's slippage and you've got these insects that are trickling to the surface and the trout are starting to work themselves into a frenzy. It hasn't been that way. I mean, I fish the Yellowstone River south of Livingston a lot over the years right before the hatch, and I really didn't do much until the hatch actually began. I think of one day where I showed up and I caught a couple of 16-inch rainbows, and I remember that because that was a rarity. It's like, wow, I actually caught these like 2 days before the hatch really took off in earnest. But most times, that just didn't happen. So I think that's that point Rosenbauer makes, that these insects aren't loitering, you know, in the current for hours. It's, you know, they don't rush to the surface until the hatch begins. So that's a good insight. You know, another reason that he cites is why we can't buy into this myth, at least completely, is that it's easier for trout to discern the difference between food and debris when it's on the surface.
Yeah.
And as soon as I read this, I thought, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. I just didn't make that connection. But when trout look up, they see light. You know, the surface is backlit. Even if it's not a sunny day, I mean, its surface is backlit, so they get a better profile of what's on top. But when they're looking straight ahead into the current, that dark subsurface makes it difficult to see what's coming until it's almost in your face. So that's what Rosenbauer's argument is, and I mean, that makes sense to me. I guess I haven't gone underwater enough to with a mask to try to look ahead like a fish. Plus, fish's vision and ours works differently. But yeah, light is so important. So that seems to ring true, doesn't it?
Well,
yeah.
The corollary to that is it makes sense too that when you're fishing streamers, they hit the movement, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly there's something that has movement within their peripheral vision,
mm-hmm.
and while they'll hit it, right?
Right.
That just makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you have another one, Dave, and to me, this is one of the most profound things.
Well, I'm glad
in the whole
I got
piece.
To be the one to say this, because it is pretty profound.
Yeah.
And he says, trout spend 80% of their time doing nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how I feel when I go fly fishing.
Yeah.
It's like 80% of the time, nothing's happening,
man.
Right?
So, and we've watched fish before. You know, we've seen them in certain runs, and we've sat down long enough and watched them to see they're not constantly. I mean, we've watched fish that are definitely feeding. But we also watched a lot of fish. Yeah, they're just sitting there, and then 2 minutes later, they take a swipe at something, and then they sit there for another 2 minutes and do nothing.
I remember there was this creek in the Driftless. It was just off the road about a mile, just south of, I think, Basketball or one of those towns up there. Basketball, is that how you say it? Basketball?
Man, I'm not sure.
It's where the Salvation Army was founded. Basketball.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, so but I remember there was this pool right under the bridge, and it was just away from the bridge enough to where you could cast into the pool, and you just see literally probably 30, 40 big fish sitting there, and it no matter what you slung at it, nothing moved, and I could never get them to rise. So when they weren't feeding, they were not feeding. So this idea, they were spending 80% of their time doing nothing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point. So I think in this article, talks about this guy who did a PhD thesis on the foraging behavior.
That he
of
knows
trout.
What a myth is,
yes.
Dave.
Yeah, because he has a PhD. Yeah,
oh,
that's right.
Yes.
I just had to say that. So he did a thesis on the foraging behavior of trout on Spruce Creek in Pennsylvania. And they watched, he and his graduate students watched fish from May through October, discovered that trout spent 86% of their time just watching the drift and only 3% of the time actually eating something. Another 8% was spent swimming back to their location after feeding. And I guess there was 3% left over. I'm not sure what they did with that other 3%. It's a plus or minus margin of error, maybe.
Yeah, could be. That's stunning, isn't it? Now, again, granted, this is one location. We talked in a previous podcast, didn't we, about how, I mean, rivers act differently. So maybe this wouldn't be the same. But I suspect that there probably wasn't some sort of variable that made this unique. I think that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
And
as a general rule, this is what happens.
Right.
Anything else, Steve?
No. But I was just thinking. Then, well, we'll get to it. I'll save that comment for a little bit. There was another one. Rosenbauer argued that some species of trout. Cutthroat, for example, he says they seem to feed more on the surface. I thought, well, that's interesting. I guess we've fished a lot of, we fished a lot for cutthroat.
Yeah.
Yellowstone cuts on the Yellowstone River and some other varieties, but that's been our biggest experience. And I don't know. Yeah, we've caught a ton off the surface. I just assumed because it was time of year. But anyway, he thinks that some species feed more on the surface and that some stretches of river seem to have more trout feeding on the surface than under it. So, for example, he cites the South Fork of the Snake River in Idaho. I actually fished there one year with my sons. We were down in Idaho Falls, and there was a guy there who took us out in his drift boat, and we did fairly well that day. So I'm familiar with the stretch of river, but not like Rosenbauer is. I mean, he thinks that particular river, yeah, you're going to run into more rising fish than some other places. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
All right, well, and that could be also because just how rich the insects are on that stretch of river, or I don't know the type of insects that are on that stretch of river. I don't know. There's probably a lot of reasons why that might be mm-hmm. true. So anyway, so yeah, the final point I think that Rosenbauer makes out of his many is that in seasons when trout get most of their food, you know, there's certain seasons in which trout get most of their food from terrestrials, right? Hoppers, moss, beetles, adult damselflies. And so in that sense, a large chunk of their feeding is on the surface. And we see that when we fish the Yellowstone. I mean, you can throw almost anything big onto the surface during the time when there's grasshoppers, you know, that window between what, late July and mid-September. And you can almost always get a rise out of
it. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there are seasons in which perhaps a larger chunk of their diet does come off the mm-hmm. surface.
So to wrap this up, at the end of the article, it's interesting. Tom Rosenbauer backtracks a bit and he says, I'm sure in most rivers, trout do close to 100% of their feeding under the surface. I thought, what? You just undermine your whole thesis. But I think his point is that there are exceptions, you know, especially when a hatch is on, and even when it isn't, he says, trout are looking up. So he says, be careful about making absolute statements. Maybe going back to something we talked about earlier, maybe the most absolute statement that you can make is that trout spend 80% of their time underwater doing nothing.
Yeah. So, well, and yeah. I would just add to all this, to that statement in particular, but rarely, when you and I pull up to a trout stream, is there an obvious hatch in play? I mean, how many times?
Right.
It doesn't mean that there isn't something sipping.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That happens, and you know that'll happen in the driftless.
Yeah.
Certainly in the spring months more than in the winter. Of course, winter, you know, has to be a certain type of temp for that to happen. But for anything to even hit the surface, like a midge hatch or BWO hatch.
Yeah.
But and so it depends on the time of year. But even so, even in the most robust time of year to fly fish and to catch things on the surface, often there are few, if any, bugs in the air.
Right.
And of course, that again, I just make that caveat, depends on the time of year.
Yeah.
So if the most of the trout are feeding on the surface, it is not obvious to me.
No, that's a good point.
I would probably say that a lot of what trout eat is under the surface if you count everything that's coming up through the water column, right?
Yeah.
And that may be even only a few inches below the surface, but it's still not the surface.
Yeah, that's a good point. So do trout really do 80% of their feeding underwater? I guess what Rosenbauer is saying, some days, but it just depends. So the lesson is, keep your dry fly box handy.
Well, I just want to say that one of the things I've admired about your brother Dave through the years is he's such a hardcore dry fly fisherman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he will catch more fish on the surface than anyone I know. And he just doesn't go to streamers and doesn't go
no.
to nymphs.
No.
Only recently, I think, has he started to fish more nymphs.
Yeah.
I saw some post on Facebook from him, and I think he mentioned that he had caught the fish on a nymph, and I thought, oh my gosh.
Like, who are you?
Yeah. What happened to our dry, hardcore
That's
dry
right.
fly fisher, right?
Yeah, because I know he caught trout in Colorado this year and last year on dries in November, December, January.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, not you know, volumes of fish, and probably not even big fish, but he said that he wanted to catch one, you know, every month of the year on a dry. I've had years in Montana where I caught trout every month of the year on a fly rod, but believe me, the ones I got in December and January were not on dries. Yeah. Well, maybe January could have been a midge, but yeah, that's crazy.
Would you say that you'd rather catch a trout on a dry on the surface than anything else?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if I can, it's just fun to see.
Yeah,
that's definitely my favorite. Probably second would be a streamer, maybe because that reminds me of the old days when I was growing up doing spinner fishing, and
yeah,
it feels the same way. You're tugging it in, and all of a sudden, bang, you feel that pull.
And it's kind of hard to screw up streamer fishing on the hook set. They either hit it or they don't.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you can maybe give too much slack or something. Yep. You know, when they hit it, you're not quite ready. But I don't know. In fact, last time we were out fishing the Driftless, I had several strikes, but I was thinking, am I doing something wrong when I was fishing streamers?
Yeah.
But they just weren't hard hits. Yeah. They were kind of like just, not nibbles, but just like they weren't fully committed to the streamer.
I know it. So there you have it. I'm sure there's some other myths that we'll need to bust at some point, myths that we've waxed eloquent about, but
yes,
but that'll do it for today. So
and where did we wax eloquent about those myths?
Oh yes.
Oh, we did in our book, The Fly Fisher's Book of Lists.
There you
Life
go.
Is short. Catch more fish.
That's right.
In fact, when I saw this article and you forwarded on this article from Tom Rosenbauer, I thought, oh gosh, I wonder how many more of these we put in our book and aren't fully true.
Yeah. And yet, then when you listen to him, he gets to the end of the article and he kind of backs off a little bit.
Yeah, you realize, he's right. Yeah. The 80% has to do with the fact that they're not doing anything.
Yeah. So really, our big idea is just, hey, don't give up on dry fly fishing. It's still a great tactic, and it's sure a lot of fun.
Yeah, sure is.
All right, that's all for today. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of fly fishing.